unfortunately, social media, marketing, food companies, whoever we want to blame it on, try to make this stuff too complicated. And of course, I love the complicated nutrition science. I got a master's in holistic nutrition, a couple board certifications, a doctorate, but you do not have to know all of that to be a healthy person. And that's why my passion is to put it into usable, understandable ways so that people can stop being so confused and frustrated. Hello, everyone. My name is Megan Lyons, double board certified clinical and holistic nutritionist. Welcome to Built, presented by FitBot.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. We have a special guest today, Megan Lyons. Megan, welcome to the show. Why don't you introduce yourself to the audience? Let folks know who you are and what you do.
Of course. Well, thank you so much to all three of you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. I am a nutritionist located in Dallas, although these days I see people all around the world, and I just love everything related to health and wellness. I love fitness, which you all are the experts in. I love nutrition, which is my area of expertise. I love meditation and spiritual wellness and all of that kind of stuff. But I'm really excited to dive into the nutrition aspects here with you all today.
It's great to have you on the show. Like we said, nutrition, I heard it said it's something like 80% of the puzzle, and it's something that I certainly wrestled with. I'm curious, why is that such a challenge for folks? I think we all approach fitness from the perspective of, I just have to run more or get more cardio or lift more weights, but we so often neglect the aspect of nutrition. Why do you think that is?
I think there are a couple reasons, and I fully agree with you here. The first reason is, unfortunately, social media, marketing, food companies, whoever we want to blame it on, try to make this stuff too complicated. And of course, I love the complicated nutrition science. I got a master's in holistic nutrition, a couple board certifications, a doctorate, more and more and more because I love learning. But you do not have to know all of that to be a healthy person. And that's why my passion is to put it into usable, understandable ways so that people can stop being so confused and frustrated when we get on social media and we see one person shouting one thing and then the other person shouting the exact opposite. People tend to throw their hands up in the air. And the second main reason that I think it can be a bit of a challenge to focus on nutrition is that there's no such thing as yes, I did it or no, I didn't. We all have to eat for the rest of our lives. So if there's another addiction, we could just choose to give it up. Or even not on the addictive scale, if it's exercising, you can say yes, I did it or no, I didn't. And you can very easily measure, oh, today I went up 5 pounds in my deadlift or something like that. It's really easy to see progress. In food, you don't see that progress because there's not really a yes or a no. And we have to get to peace, come to peace with eating in a way that fuels our body and makes us feel good every day for the rest of our lives. So it just feels like a little bit more of a nebulous cloud out there to people.
It's interesting that you touched on that, Megan, because I'm not sure that I've shared with you, but I actually come from an eating disordered past. And so I had to learn how to, exactly what you said, come to peace with food. And I share that experience with a lot of people, a lot of my clients, because I feel like there's a lot of relatable material between someone who's abusing food on either end of that spectrum. I think we're all hoping to find that place where we can come to peace with the fact that we do have to eat every day. We have to fuel our bodies multiple times a day. And so we need to be able to get to a point where we can come to a place of peace in those decisions that we're making. And those decisions that we're making can also move us in the direction of our goals, whatever those goals might be. And they're different for everyone. So if you were to pare some advice down to just some very simple basics for people that want to get started in a healthier direction, where would you start?
Well, I think we can dive in a little bit more, but the simplest that I can make it is almost everyone. I'm talking literally 99.999% of people need to eat more vegetables, more water, and less sugar and processed foods. Mm-hmm. And then we can get into what exactly that means and how to do that and are macronutrients important and whatever. But if we just keep it super high level, more vegetables, more water, and less sugar and processed foods is going to get people really quite far.
At one point, I was 35% body fat, but my internal numbers, like my cholesterol, was still 120, which people would say that's a good cholesterol. But being 35% body fat isn't healthy. So what is a proper balance between internal numbers and obviously having not the overweight body I had at the time?
Yeah, great question. And I don't have like one specific cutoff that you're, yes, you're healthy or no, you're not. Mm-hmm. I would say though, if I had to choose between those, I would prioritize the internal metrics because it goes both ways. There are people out there who look very fit and healthy and inside they're not healthy. Their lab work is not showing positive results. And those people actually have worse outcomes in terms of mortality because oftentimes they don't know that something's going on in them. So I would prioritize the internal if you have access to labs and things like that. I think that's most important. However, we kind of know, like you said, you knew at 30%+ body fat, this is not optimal for my body. And eventually that's going to result in joint decline. Eventually that excess fat is going to turn into insulin resistance, things like that. For that time, your body could just kind of overpower the excess weight that it was carrying.
So you're working with clients and you're helping them get their nutrition in shape. What are some of the common misconceptions or myths that you run into with your clients around food and nutrition?
Yes, great question. There are so many, so let me go through just a few. Mm-hmm. I think probably one that many people fall into is I just have to be eating less. I have to starve myself. If I'm not hungry, I'm not doing it correctly. The less I can eat, the better. And there is maybe some truth to that. If someone is excessively over consuming calories, then yes, they probably do need to cut down. But the vast majority of people that I work with are not doing that. It's either they are under consuming calories, especially the women, the high achieving women in their 40s-ish that have tried everything to lose weight and they're just not getting there and they're hitting it hard in the gym. They are often under consuming. And even not just those people, but many of the people that I work with, it's the quality of food that's not working out for them. So they feel like they're eating like a bird. They're saying, oh my gosh, I only had half a sandwich for lunch. But then you look at it and they're also consuming a handful of candy 8 times a day when they walk past the receptionist thing. And then they're putting sugar in their coffee, which they do like 6 times a day. And then they're having just a little bit of ice cream. It's all these other things that they're getting plenty of calories. They're just not getting enough nourishment. And that's slowing down their metabolism and making them feel icky and not enabling them to put on the appropriate muscle from their workouts that they're genuinely working hard for. It's just not showing in their body.
I think most people have no idea how much they're actually consuming in a day. And so my advice is always to let's start tracking first to see where we're at. Because like you're saying, they think they're just having that sandwich, but they're, oh yeah, well, I grabbed that protein bar in the car and oh yeah, then I had, you know, it's a couple of bites of the kid's sandwich here and this and that. And those things all add up. Like I know we're talking about kind of like little bits here and there, but they do add up. And I just think people are often eating in a very unconscious way. They're not actually being very mindful about when they are eating and what they're actually consuming. So for me, my recommendation is usually that they need to start tracking. Like we need to get a baseline of where are you? Are you consuming too few calories or are you actually eating a lot more than you think? And sometimes my recommendation for them is as simple as just let's take pictures of everything that you eat in a day. Just your phone's with you, just snap a picture and then we're going to have a look at it at the end of the day.
I agree. That's super helpful. I'm interested that you brought that up directly after talking about your disordered eating struggle, because I find it to be a really precarious proposition for people who are in the middle of disordered eating struggle. Mm-hmm. So I'm very careful to make sure that they have done the work to make peace with food, which we said, and make peace with their bodies. And then it's a great tool. And the pictures maybe to people at many stages of that can be helpful. So I work with an app where they just take pictures, just like you said, that's great. But when it gets into actual numerical tracking, I want to make sure that they've crossed that point where they feel really comfortable and they won't beat themselves up about going, you know, 20 calories over or something like that. And then, yes, I think it's a great tool.
100%. I actually do not track my calories to this day. It's right. not something that I can do. So for me, it's as simple as tabulating throughout the day how much protein I'm getting. I'm focusing yes. on the positive of trying to make sure that I meet my protein goals. And I actually don't track my calories because it can become a very obsessive behavior. 100% correct.
Amazing. Thanks for sharing.
Let's share that with the audience. What is the right amount of protein in the average diet?
Oh, that's a great question that I would love to have us all chime in because we might all have different answers mm-hmm. and then we can allow the audience to come to the best answer for themselves. What I will say for sure is that the RDA, which is 0.8 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight, that's mm-hmm. too low for every single person that I know. That's mm-hmm. calculated based on what you need to survive. If you were hooked up to life support in the hospital, that's the amount of protein that you need to survive. So 0.8 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight is too low. Mm-hmm. Now, if someone is spending a whole lot of effort, energy, time looking to build muscle, I am going to go on the high end of protein, probably about 1 gram per pound of body weight, which mm-hmm. is more than double that RDA recommendation. And if someone conversely is like, no, don't really, not trying to gain muscle right now, not really trying to lose body fat, just kind of want to be healthy, maybe as low as 0.5 grams per pound of body weight. But most people are not doing that. So most of my clients are closer to the high end of that. But again, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I agree with you 100%. And like you said, it always depends on people's goals. But if you are actively trying to gain muscle and you are, you know, like if you're coming to me as a personal trainer and you're working with me and we're looking to build muscle, that one, it's such an easy calculation, don't you think, to just say that, yes. okay, 1 gram of protein per 1 pound of body. It's so easy. People can relate to it instantly. But it's a job. Like that is a job to make sure that you're trying to get that on a daily basis. And I always remind people, make sure you start fresh every day, okay? So just because you hit your goal yesterday, that doesn't help you today. You got to start fresh again in the morning. And just because you didn't hit it today doesn't mean that you can't start fresh again tomorrow morning. So it is a daily endeavor to try and get that much.
I agree completely.
Earlier, you mentioned that a lot of your clients are under-consuming calories. Do you encounter any roadblocks when you get them to eat calories? Do they feel like, oh, I'm going to get too fat or... Is there a mental block for them?
100% of the time, yes, there is a mental block. Because again, we've been told you have to eat less. And to some extent, that is true. Again, for my clients who I love so dearly, where maybe they have 100, 200 pounds to lose, they do need to consume less. So for everyone, it's different. But for the average person, again, I mentioned that stereotypical, like high achieving woman in her 40s who is just trying to lose the last 10 pounds and gain some muscle. She has probably tried so hard to do all of these things. And the only thing she can think of is I must be eating too much lettuce. Oh my goodness. So then she cuts mm-hmm. down on her lettuce and she's hurting her metabolism in doing that. And there is a little bit of truth in someone who has damaged their metabolism so much through potentially disordered eating, through fad diets, some of these interesting programs out there, and through just restricting over time, that when they do start eating a normal amount, if they just flipped all of a sudden to a normal amount, they would feel a little bit inflamed. They would feel heavy. They're eating a physical higher volume of food. So it does take a couple of weeks for your body to learn to process that and then turn on the jets for your metabolism. And that's hard for people.
So we're chatting with Megan Lyons, and you are a consultant. You help people with their nutrition. You also have a website. Do you want to talk a little bit about your website and your podcast?
Sure, absolutely. So my website was started in 2013 when I was management consulting and really hoping to jump into the nutrition world. And since then, I ended up taking a year before I actually left. But since then, I've been publishing about one blog post per week consistently. So there's so much free information on there. I tell people all the time, mm-hmm. I hope to work with you one-to-one, but at least just start by searching on the website for free information. Probably whatever keyword you find or can think of, you'll find there. And that's thelionshare.org. And then my podcast is called Wellness Your Way. I have not been podcasting as long as I've been blogging, but I have about 180 episodes up or so. And it's so much fun. I love talking to other people in my field or in tangential fields. And then I do some solo episodes as well.
Yeah. So the Lion Share, and that's spelled L-Y-O-N. That's your last name, right?
L-Y-O-N-S. That trips people up all the time. L-Y-O-N-S. And then there's another S for share. So L-Y-O-N-S-S-H-A-R-E.org.
Okay, Megan, so you touched on something that I sometimes think might get blown out of proportion on social media, and this idea of metabolism confusion, or that like reset or that cleanse that we need to do to get our toxins all out. I think there's a lot of terms that get thrown around out there that aren't necessarily based in science.
Absolutely. So let's define two of those terms. One is detoxification and the other one is metabolism or metabolic health. For detoxification, we actually do need to detoxify all the time, but we're already doing it. You and I are doing it right now. Our kidneys and our liver are detoxifying us at all times. They are miraculous organs filtering through every single thing we breathe, consume, all of that. And they're so great. So unless someone has some kind of rare medical condition, I do not recommend a traditional detox. There are a few, again, rare conditions that I would recommend an actual medical detox. But for most people, we don't need that because we're doing it at all times, which is amazing. And then on the flip side, or related to that, is metabolism or metabolic health. So metabolism is just the process of turning food into energy. We're, again, doing that, hopefully, most of us every single day. And metabolic health is a real thing. So metabolic health, you may have heard the statistic that 88% of Americans are metabolically unhealthy. This is related to five factors, which are like fasting blood glucose, waist circumference, hypertension, HDL, which we want higher, and triglycerides, which we want lower. And if you fall into the abnormal zones for any one of those, you're considered metabolically unhealthy. So that is important and something to consider. But this process of X food slows your metabolism or speeds your metabolism or whatever, that's overhyped.
So as a nutritionist then, I am going to put you on the spot here, because I actually would like to get your thoughts on. People often want to know, what is the best diet that I should stick to? There's intermittent fasting, there's low carb, there's high protein, there's plant-based, there's all of these different ways that people can go about eating. Do you have any clarification, any preference, or do you feel like that is user specific to each person's individual situation?
I genuinely do. I don't follow a diet, like one of those diets myself. I don't prescribe a diet to 90%+ of my clients. I do think that we need to follow some specific guidelines, which is almost all of us need more vegetables, water, less sugar, and processed foods, like I said. We do need to focus on protein, whether that's plant-based protein or animal-based protein. I can talk about my read of the literature between those two. But in terms of something like paleo or South Beach or keto or any of those kinds of things, I think the average person doesn't need that. Now, if someone loves it, if someone feels amazing on keto and is metabolically healthy, great. If someone feels amazing following paleo and they don't miss dairy or beans or grains and they're metabolically healthy, great. For me personally, I would rather not have restrictions. I'm not going to go around and eat, I don't know, 29 donuts per day, but I don't need paleo to tell me that that's not a healthy thing. That's me personally. And then again, I really believe everyone can choose for themselves.
I don't think there's a magic bullet. There's no magic to this, like one diet versus the other, one way of eating versus the other. I think you, like you're talking about, all of those things have to come into alignment with the way that you want to eat and the goals that you have for yourself.
I'm always looking to change my mind. Just in the past 3 months, I've been to the Physicians Committee of Responsible Medicine in DC, which is a more vegan leaning conference. And then I went to the Metabolic Health Summit, which is a more keto leaning conference. I'm always looking for people to convince me based on their research. But after trying to take in as much as I possibly can, I almost always just land right in the middle.
I think whatever you can stick to is probably what's going to be most successful for you.
That's right.
And that's where I'm at, because even though I'm 100% plant-based, I'm not one of those plant-based people who are militant against meat eaters. My only concern is that meat eaters get enough fiber. And I've noticed that fiber and the talk of fiber has been a big trend here the last couple of years. What are your thoughts on fiber? What can you inform our audience, the importance of it and why they need it?
I am such a fan of fiber. I personally do eat an omnivorous style diet, but I eat 10 fist-sized servings of vegetables per day. That's a lot. That is what makes me feel amazing. I eat vegetables with every single meal. I don't eat a breakfast without vegetables. Like, I'm always consuming vegetables. I don't think every single person has to go quite that far, but the average American consuming, I think it's 1.7, round up to 2 servings of vegetables per day. And one of those is a French fry or baked potato, and the other one is ketchup or pizza sauce. So we're really not consuming.
Oh my.
Any fiber. I know.
That's a loose definition of vegetable, isn't it?
Trust me.
I'm in though.
No, don't be in. Because that's the definition for kids in school too. One day when I free up some more bandwidth and time, I have such a passion for trying to change the school education or the school nutrition system, but that's a conversation for another day. Still, the average American gets 5% of the recommended fiber that they need. And fiber is essential for lowering our LDL cholesterol, for maintaining our gut health, which our gut health is then important for everything. Most of our immune system is in our gut. Most of our serotonin and happy hormones are manufactured in our gut. It's not just about what comes out in the toilet, although that's important too, but our gut health relies on fiber. Those good bacteria in your colon, they chew up fiber in order to produce something called short chain fatty acids, which is like the good stuff that heals us. So I think fiber is super important.
So when we're talking about vegetables, we often lump fruits and vegetables together. Do you make a distinction between those as being necessary in our diet? Like if someone's having, you know, whole fruit with their breakfast, and like, are those things also giving us some of those nutrients that you're talking about on that fiber that we need?
They are. And personally, I consume fruit. Of my 10 servings per day, maybe 2 of those are fruit. So I am including that. However, when I call it fruits and vegetables instead of vegetables, then I'll get someone whose goal that week is to consume 3 servings of vegetables per day or fruits and vegetables. And they'll say, oh, great. I had 3 bananas, which is better than nothing. It is, but it doesn't give us all the rich micronutrients that we need. I believe you can be healthy without eating fruit. It's very hard to be healthy without eating any vegetables at all. So I like people to prioritize vegetables. I say about 2/3 of the servings as a rough guideline could be vegetables, and then complement that with fruit. Fruit has really tasty antioxidants and nutrients and all kinds of good stuff too. It's just, we can't skip the veggies.
I love that. I love that definition. I always worry when I hear someone who's on a diet that bans fruit as like being like a no-no, you can't. And I just think, is that sustainable in your lifestyle if fruit is on a banned list? And so that leads me into my question to you. How do you feel around that idea of having foods listed as either good or bad?
If I could change my mind on this, I think I would be so much more popular, because everyone who comes into my program just wants the list. They want me day one to give them a list of I can eat these foods and I can't eat these foods. And I don't even use those words, can and can't. You're an adult human. You can eat whatever you want. Now, which foods are going to get you to your goals? We could talk about that and how to consume the foods that are really important to you that may be less healthy in moderation. Great. But I just think, to your point, Janneke, I don't think that it's sustainable for people to have an X list. I cannot ever eat this, because then if they do, they're going to feel terrible and they think, oh, wheels off. Now I have to start again Monday or January 1st or whatever else. That's not healthy emotionally or physically. Or if they don't, they're building up this pressure thinking, this diet is hard. This diet is hard. And I don't want it to feel hard. I eat chocolate every single day, for example. I don't eat 3 bars of chocolate every single day, but that's a food that's really important to me. So why would I put that on the quote bad or can't list? That just doesn't make any sense to me.
And don't you think the moment you put something on that list, that's all you can think about? Like if you Absolutely. Tell yourself you can't have, like for me, peanut butter is a daily. Like if I yes. were to tell myself, and I have in the past in some of my more unhealthy times, tried to tell myself that I can't have peanut butter. And it's just something that I really, really crave. And it's very satisfying for me. So for me yes. to find a lifestyle where I can still meet my goals and still have my daily little dose of peanut butter, and it's not, you know, something that I'm going to have to feel guilty about. To me, that's success and that's sustainable. And again, anything that is sustainable is what I'm looking to incorporate into my life.
Love it. Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about nutrition and we're talking mostly about consuming foods. I'm curious about your thoughts around supplements.
So I personally take a lot of supplements. I do not think that 92% of people need to take a lot of supplements to be healthy. I like it because this is my field. I like experimenting on myself. I like learning more about what supplements are out there and how it feels and all of this kind of stuff. But most people are not me. And the idea of taking a lot of supplements does not sound fun. So I treat them exactly as the word says, supplement. It's not, unfortunately, for most people listening who are most people in America who want the pill to be the answer. It's not that. A supplement will never get you to your goals alone. Can it supplement? Like, for example, if someone's deficient in vitamin D, am I going to recommend a vitamin D supplement? Of course I am.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense. And I'm also going to encourage them to go outside and get sunlight. But there are reasons, good reasons, I think, for supplementation. And there are also a lot of really dangerous supplements out there on the market. So the reason I can experiment is because I have independent subscriptions to 3 labs who test this stuff. And I know exactly what I'm doing and I know the mechanisms of action. But if you're not going to do that research and you haven't been recommended it by a credible source, I'd just have a little caution.
Yeah, I was going to ask about vitamin D. There are elements in our diet that are just because of the way we are today, you know, most people are busy, they're active, and they're not going to get enough vitamin D as a matter of course in the average diet.
Mm-hmm.
So supplementing vitamin D. Are there other supplements that you recommend on a regular basis?
Yes, I would say maybe 3 more fall into a similar category. I find almost everyone feels better supplementing with magnesium. Now, magnesium's in a lot of my favorite foods. Chocolate, I already mentioned, but leafy greens, any kind of dark colored vegetables, pumpkin seeds, which I eat a lot of, those are all magnesium rich foods. However, stress depletes our magnesium. Exercise can deplete our magnesium, and just this chronic lifestyle of overconnectedness depletes our magnesium. So that's one. If I were to recommend a supplement beyond vitamin D, that's a common one. Omega-3 fatty acids are another common one because we take in tons of omega-6s as a culture and we need these in balance. Omega-6s are the inflammatory oils. Omega-3 are the anti-inflammatory. And we need both, but we're just really out of balance. So, of course, helping people lower their inflammatory foods, but also that supplement with omega-3. And then the last one that I'll put into that bucket, because it's easily measurable, just like the vitamin D, is a B complex, B like boy. A lot of people who are feeling fatigued, who are stressed out, who might not be consuming B vitamins from their diet if they are plant-based and aren't careful about that, or just general, if they're eating a lot of processed foods, they might be lacking in enough B vitamins.
So can you give us some clarification on that magnesium supplement? Because I know when you go to the store, there's a whole bunch of different kinds of magnesium and different formulations. So is there a specific one that you would recommend people look for?
Yes, there are. So if anyone has ever gotten a colonoscopy, you've taken magnesium citrate, likely that's going to give you diarrhea if you have normal bowel function and you take a lot of that. So let's not do that on a daily basis. Yes, incidentally, it can be useful for people who struggle with constipation, although I would say it's a Band-Aid, not a solution. We got to figure out how to get more fiber in you. But anyway, that one's a pass on the shelves. My favorite form of magnesium is a form called magnesium L-threonate. So it's the letter L-T-H-R-E-O-N-A-T-E. That's not a brand, it's a format. I'm brand agnostic. You can find that in many brands. But that one has been shown in research to be the best at crossing the blood-brain barrier. So for functions like, or purposes like anxiety, sleep, brain fog, cognitive decline, even magnesium has been shown to have a lot of benefits. So that's the one that I take. Two other forms that are relevant to your audience. Magnesium malate is really great for someone who has muscle cramps, who is exercising a lot, and struggles with more of the neuromuscular magnesium depletion. And then finally, magnesium glycinate is kind of like a combination between all the good ones. So that's a nice format to find as well.
I want to touch on something that's not really a supplement. It's a supplement that a lot of us use. Do you have any thoughts or feelings, or maybe just some science-based opinions about caffeine? And I think a lot of us in the exercise community use caffeine pretty liberally. And I think a lot of us in our society, just in general, use caffeine to really kind of keep us going throughout our days. So what are your thoughts, feelings, and recommendations around caffeine?
Yes, I'll start with the good news. And unfortunately, there is less good news on the other side, but let's just celebrate this good news, which is that a moderate intake of caffeine, specifically coffee, but caffeine in general, has been linked to a lot of positive outcomes. So all-cause mortality, brain, all kinds of neurodegenerative conditions, less risk of those, even cardiovascular conditions, a moderate consumption, which is about 2 cups of coffee per day, shows benefit. Now, unfortunately, after that, it gets pretty detrimental. And as someone who had cortisol and adrenal problems before, for people who don't know what those things are that I'm talking about, basically, like you burn yourself into the ground, you tax your stress system too much. I was relying on a lot of caffeine. I was not fueling my body well. I was over-exercising. I was not sleeping. I was overstressed, like all of those things. And caffeine was a part of the problem. There is such a thing as too much, especially if you're not taking care of your body or if it's interfering with your sleep. And the cutoff for that really depends on the person. There's something called a fast metabolizer, which is literally like you can chug a cup of coffee and go to bed 20 minutes later and not have it impede your sleep. If that's you, you actually have less detriment from consuming caffeine. Okay. But still, the research shows that at about 5 or 6 cups of coffee, even for fast metabolizers, you're getting declining. I know you don't want to hear it, but there are risks associated with it.
Still, oh, no, I think it's really good for us to be aware. And I think most of us try to moderate and be aware of how much caffeine we're taking in and when we're taking it in and stuff. So, but that's great. I love that clarification. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, so we've been talking a lot about consumption. Now we're talking about supplements. What about going without? What about fasting? The water fast with bone broth is one of the latest fads. What are your thoughts on fasting?
So there is a lot of great research on longevity and specifically a process called autophagy, which is like killing dead cells. A lot of great research on longevity if you are a middle-aged, non-stress male. And so if you are, I actually would recommend experimenting with extending your fasting window if you're a middle-aged, non-stressed male. Now, if you're not, if any of those things don't apply to you, if you're excessively stressed or if you're training excessively, or if you're a female, especially if you're a female who happens to have some hormonal instability, either thyroid or sex hormones, or if you have a history of disordered eating, there are a lot of ifs that I would not recommend fasting for. And I will also say bone broth is like an amazing food. I love bone broth, but bone broth is protein-based and that turns off autophagy. So if you're really going to fast for digestive purposes, bone broth would be great. But for longevity, the bone broth is cutting everything off.
Hmm. Oh, Megan.
Even if it's under, say, 50 calories.
So there's a lot of people screaming back and forth about this. And I think the truth is no one knows the exact amount of calories. And my hypothesis is it will depend on the person. So for me to consume 50 calories of protein versus a 300-pound man to consume 50 calories of protein, that's going to be a lot different. My body's going to react a lot differently. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that if you're going to fast, do something like a little bit of coconut milk or heavy cream or something like that in your coffee, and do more fat-based to tide you over instead of protein-based. Valter Longo, who I just heard at one of those conferences I mentioned, he is like the godfather of fasting. He started the ProLon fasting mimicking diet, and that is a severely protein depleted fasting diet, which actually works. And a lot of the research is done on that. I will also say, though, since I'm now saying, yes, there are some benefits, this is not the end all be all. Like, what you do 95% of the days is going to matter a lot more than your once a year or twice a year fast. But if you've already mastered those basics and then you want to experiment with the fasting mimicking diet or a coffee 24-hour fast or even a bone broth, even just to see what that feels like, then why not try it?
Megan, I feel like we've just scratched the surface, and this has been such an interesting conversation for us to be able to have you here. I love having kind of the authority on all these things and all these myths that are floating around out there. And I know that our audience is really going to learn and enjoy hearing the things that you've shared here today. So I just really want to thank you so much for your time and for your knowledge, just sharing that with us. It's just been a wonderful, wonderfully informative interview.
Thank you all so much. I had a lot of fun.
Thanks to our listeners. Check out the show notes at fitbod.me/podcast for all the details from this episode. Download the Fitbod app from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. Use the promo code BUILT for a 14-day free trial. We'd love to hear from you. Leave us a comment and a rating on your favorite podcast network. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.